So the Gemara, explains why we need in the Mishnah both the case of Misachi Bekubia as well as the case of Mafriche Yonin. And we're going now according to the Mandiomar that Mafriche Yonin are basically people who bet and they gamble on dove racers, right? So each one bets on a different dove, which dove is going to come in first. And that's another form of gamble. So why did the Mishnah have to tell me that both a Misachi Bekubia, a classic gambler, and a Mafriche Yonim gambler would both be possible? So I'm just going to review the Gemara at the bottom of Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. We're going to start today on Chaf Hey Amud Aleph. We're going to start today on Chaf Hey Amud Beis. But just to review, the Gemara wants to know in which of these two cases, in the gambling case and the Mafriche Yonim case, where is there more of a svara to say that it's Gomar Umakni, that he really made a serious decision and an absolute commitment with the Gemiras Das that he would pay this money if in event that he loses the gamble. So the Gemara thinks that if we only had the case of Misachik Bekubia, is a person would say, and this you'll see on the top of Chaf Hei Amud Beis, Kimli ben Afshoy di Adana Tfei. I know that I'm better at this than he has, than my opponent. And he really believes that he is going to win this bet, this gamble. He has convinced himself, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I would say that in such a case, he's posel yedus because he's really stealing someone's money. This is a full-fledged asmachta case. But in the case of the Yona, where the success or failure of the Yona to come in first in this race is tola bedas Yona, it depends on the Yona itself, ema lo, maybe in such case it's not considered an asmachta because he came to the absolute conclusion that he's willing to pay in case he loses, realizing full well that he may very well lose. He has no great abilities here or skills that he can outsmart the other Yona, the other guy's Yona. So therefore, in such a case, there's no gezel because he comes to an absolute commitment to pay in event that he loses the race. So that's why the Mishnah had to tell me that even Mafriche Yonim are also considered gazlanim and their posuliyedus. Now the Gemara goes the other way around. What if it would have only told me the case of Mafriche Yonim? So I would have said that the case of Mafriche Yonim is unique. It's different than the case of Misachi Bekubia because he thinks that he's going to win and his Yonah is going to come in first. And at this point, the Gemara gives us a whole explanation as to, oh, thank you so much, as to how he's going to use his skills to encourage the Yonah to take off and quickly and win the race. So that's called, in the Gemara's language, here, about three lines down from the top of Chaf Hei Amud Beis, Benaksha Talya Milsa Anoya Dana Lenakoshe Tfe. So he's to give a kind of a cackle, you know, some sort of banging of these two boards that are made of wood. And the owner of the Yona knew that after a long training period, the Yona was very sensitive to hear those noises. And whenever they, you know, it was a training that whenever the Yona would hear those noises, it would start moving fast. It would hear the noise. It was a message from the owner of the yoda, the trainer of the yoda, that he has to be mizdaris and he has to merely. And I know how to do this better. I'm a better trainer than my friend. And in that case, he really anticipates that he'll win the race. He has no thought, no expectation that he'll lose the race. And therefore, it's an asmachta case. He never really committed himself to pay this money, never entertaining the possibility that he'll lose. But in the case of gambling, misachik v'kuvia, that's called tole v'das atzmo, which means that he has an absolute hischaivus, no matter what happens and what the results of this gamble are, even if he has to pay, he has an absolute commitment to pay. That's not a chisard of asmachta. And the final word is tzricha. Therefore, I need both cases of misachik v'kuvia, mafricha yona, both have to be included in the Mishnah.
How the Tepchad is saying the same thing. He's both Somech al Atzmo, if you're saying that way.
Correct. In both cases, Somech al Atzmo, but where would there be more of a Somech al Atzmo? In the first case, where the Mishnah only mentioned Misachik Bekubia, there the gambler is Somech al Atzmo. In the second case, where the Mishnah only mentioned Mafricha Yona, there's as far to say Somech al Atzmo. In both cases, He's told him das atzmo. The Gemara said that if we only had in the Mishnah Misachik Bekubia, we would assume that in Yonah he's really dependent upon the Yonah and he doesn't know.
So based on that, if you're doing some type of gambling that you can't possibly somech atzmo, like you roulette wheel, you don't even do it. You don't even get to throw whatever somebody else does.
Right. It's purely chance.
So then there's no somech al atzmo in that.
Correct.
Case.
And in that case, it would be an absolute ischaivus, and there would be no asmach. There would be no psul gzeila.
Somebody
told me, and I mentioned this a week ago. That, I don't know if it's true, that in blackjack, there's no way you can outsmart the other guy. Either you get the right thing or you don't. I don't know what blackjack is.
I disagree with that.
We'll call it roulette wheels. Ruben, you told me that in roulette wheels, it's even a small percentage that will win, right? It's less than 50%.
Of course.
Right. 136.
One out of 36.
One of 36 plus whatever. Whatever the numbers are.
You can have black or red.
Whatever it is.
It gets you close to 50%.
And let me ask you a question. So what's the logic? Because if he plays 36 times, he'll finally win and he'll make more money than what he lost in the 36?
No, is that, I mean, the logic is that you... because you get 36 to 1. No, sometimes the odds are much higher. You know, like you get more, like I think if you put, I don't know, but it's just a matter of, because there's so many different chances, so the payout is higher. It's like a horse that's not supposed to win, the odds are much greater than if he does
win. But in actual statistics, do most people win?
Most people lose.
Most people lose.
Right. And the house has to win.
That's why Vegas.
Otherwise, they don't.
That's why
the game.
That's right.
It's how fast they take your money.
So like, I'm just wondering, you know.
People do it for the whatever.
Entertainment.
I see. It's a social thing.
Status. Some people think they win. Some people think that they win.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe some people think they were born under a lucky star.
Yeah,
and there is, I mean, they talk about, there is a release of, I think it's dopamine or something, you get a rush when you think you're going to win or this or that. I mean, it's
fun, in other words. They make it fun.
Well,
you are
you wear a bow tie with a white collar.
No, right.
They pump oxygen into the game part to keep you excited.
They also, there are no windows usually in those places.
Yeah. And therefore what?
So you don't know if it's day or night. You still play all the time.
Yeah.
Like you go, that's what it is.
It's above time and space.
Or darkened windows.
Yeah, they're happy to take your money slowly.
It's like the slot machines. It's also the same thing.
Lose five, win two. Right. Lose 10, win one.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why.
So now let's go back to Rami Bar Chama. Right? Rami Bar Chama, back on Daf Chaf Heyam and Aleph, was of the opinion that Misachik Bekubia is guilty of Me'ein Gzela, and the reason for that is because he is in violation of Asmachta Lo Kanya. And then we have to ask ourselves the following question. If a person is guilty of gambling, and therefore he violates Asmachta, and it's Kein Gzela, at what point can he reinstate himself as a kosher eid? We've disqualified him because of his gambling. We had the case of a person who was a tabach and he was machshil, he was selling in the market non-kosher meat, trefa. And we had a whole process by which he had to prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that he had done tshuva and it was genuine. You remember we spoke about his packing out of this location and moving to a place where nobody knows him. There he's Beishav Aveda Chashuva, or for example he'll shecht and he'll declare that it's treif even though he'll take a financial loss. So the Gemara wants to know now, at what point, according to Rabbi Bar Chama, in the case of a Besachik Bekubia, can he be considered to be Chozer B'tshuva? And that's the subject of the Braisa that we're going to learn now. Now, the Gemara calls it Mesve. It's going to take a little bit of time and a little bit of patience on our part to understand exactly what Mesve means over here. Meaning, if the Braisa is addressing the question as to when and how the Masachik Bekuvia reinstates himself through tshuva as a kosher aid, that doesn't seem to undermine in any way the shita of Rabbi Bar Chama or Rabbi Chama or Rabbi Chama. Let's go back to Rabbi Chama again. That's the case of Mafriche Yonim, and Rabbi Chama said that it was a case of Ara. Ara, if you recall, was a kind of gezel where he sends out this bird in order to attract birds from other shovchim. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And he nets them in. You know, he captures them for himself. And that's called gezel midarkei shalom, right? Because even though those birds technically don't belong to anyone, no one has private ownership, but nevertheless, according to Rabbi Chami, the Rabbanan instituted a quasi-bailus, because otherwise it's going to be anarchy. And b'nei darki shalom, they said that there's ke'en gzela. So let's see if we can learn this braisa and begin to understand why the b'nei yeshiva, when they quoted this braisa, mesve, they asked it as a stira, as a contradiction to the shita of Rabbi Chama. So first of all, what's important here is not only the tshuva, but the description of what's going on in each of these cases. We have three cases, actually four cases, that are mentioned in the Mishnah. And what's common to all four cases is that they're posuliyedus. So the first case is Masachik Bekuvia, the second is Malva Beribis, the third is Mafriche Yonim, and finally we have Sochre Shvius. And in each case, the Braisa is going to describe exactly what they're doing, what utensils they use to implement their agenda, and therefore how they can destroy these instruments and establish and demonstrate their tshuva. That is the subject of this braisa. So number one, what kind of behavior pattern, what kind of instruments do they use in each one of these four violations, and therefore how do they reinstitute themselves through tshuva? Hamasachik Bekubia, Elu Hein Hamasachakim Befisvesin. Fisvesin are broken pieces of wood. When I was a kid, we used to play with bottle caps. Do you remember that? I'm really dating myself. right, from the soda bottles. What do you call it? Pop? Or, yeah, right. Yeah. That's in Chicago they call it pop. In New York they call it soda. So what they do is they have these small chips of wood that were dedicated for this game, and they would play a game with them. However, there's another kind of Masachei Pekuvia, which is not so sophisticated. You know, you didn't buy the chips, but rather Lovis Fisus and Belvada Omru Elafilu Beklipe Agozim Uklipe Rimoni. Okay, these are not, you know, professional gambling instruments, right? What happens is you eat a walnut, and then you break the walnut, so you have the klipa, the outer shell of the walnut, or you break a pomegranate, and there's a very thick shell on the pomegranate, so you dry these shells off, and you use them to gamble. And that's not a real sophisticated professional way. You know, you wouldn't buy klipe egozim or klipe rimonim in a store. But in the case of fisfisim, you know, those are the sophisticated gamblers that they go into a store, they buy these chips. These are specially made chips that of wood that are designated for gambling. So that's the first. That's the answer to the first question that the Braisa is addressing in each of these four cases, namely, what are the instruments which are used for this violation? So these are the three possibilities that were common in those days. Again, today we have different kinds of chips, but it doesn't matter. For a gambler, the one is the more sophisticated one, the official fisfisin, those are the chips. And they also had various kinds of psoles, klipos, that they used for gambling. So that if you take a look at Rashi, afilu klipe, Rashi explains why this Bryce had to mention klipe egozim and klipe remotim. What was the chiddush? So Rashi says that since it's not designated for that purpose, it's only b'derech mikra. I mean, how long is it going to last, you know, these klipos? You know, you can play a couple of games with them. So it really indicates if he's using these klipos of rimonim or egozim, that he's just a gambler b'derech mikra. But nevertheless, he's pasul yedus. He's considered a gambler. Even if it's only b'derech mikra, it's not b'kfius. And this would really support the opinion of Rabbi Bar Chama that we mentioned, that gambling entails a ke'ein gzela situation. Now the Braisa goes ahead and addresses the second question. How do you do tshuva? How do you demonstrate a genuine repentance? When can we reinstate them as Edim Ksherim? And again, Ruvein, we're going to have to ask whether it's Lakima, Double Labira, Double, meaning we need Hakraza. You remember in the case of a Psul Edis Darabonet, so it could be that, you know, until the moment of Hakraza, then. So I don't know if Chazara also needs Hakraza, meaning what happens if they do what they have to do, they do Tshuva, but Bezin hasn't yet evaluated that. And in the meantime, they gave Eidah somewhere, you know, somewhere out in Noah's womb. You know, so that's another question. We spoke about the psul, it needs a kiyum l'dover. You need a hachraza. What about the chazara? Does that also need a hachraza? Okay. So the Braisa says, Vishayishbaru es pispisehen. They have to break up these chips. Basically, it means they have to destroy these chips that were used as instruments in their gambling. So, Rabbosai, what chiddush do you see in this braisa? what would you think could have been enough, could have been sufficient? And the Bryce says, no, it's not sufficient.
Just stop playing.
Exactly. It's not enough to terminate your behavior pattern and say, I'm out of here. I'm going cold turkey. I am quitting my professional gambling status. No. You have to go one step further. In order to demonstrate that you are sincere, you have to take this pispisayim and you have to break them up. Now, what happens in the case of Klipei HaGozim, where he throws it into the rubbish bin and they're absolutely worthless? How does he establish his tshuva? So the Braisa continues and says, V'yachzur bahem chazora gemura. Now, this edition of the Braisa might be addressing our question. And the vav of v'yachzeru might be read as an O, not as an and, you need A plus B, but rather you need A in the case of the ratio that's fispisit, and you need B, that's called chazor gemura, in the case of klipos. But, you know, the question still begs to be asked, well, what do you mean yachzur mehem chazor gemura? How do you demonstrate that? So Rashi says that he has to completely terminate his plague. Now you have to ask, well, how long does that, you know, let's say for one day he doesn't play, that maybe he had basketball practice that day. I don't know. Why did he gamble on that day? Does that prove that he's a chazor gemura? Is it a week? Is it a month? So the Braisa continues and says, "Dafilu bechinam lo avdi." He has to go as far, like to sort of cleanse his hands and distance himself from gambling, that he won't play the same games for free. You know, like young children, they might play cards, but not for money. That's called bechinam. So there was never a schaivus, there was never any transfer of money. Nobody is losing over here. And you can't call it a smachta. There would be no psul edus or mesachim bekuvi in the case of a chinam. But nevertheless, in the process of tshuva, the bal tshuva has to go to another extreme. And he's not even willing to do this action or preoccupy himself with this kind of game that normally he would have been playing for money. And now he's playing it for free, just for fun. He has to be marking himself from even that kind of enjoyment, that kind of pleasure. Because if a person is addicted, and this you'll know from Alcoholics Anonymous and all this, it's not that we're going to say, okay, you know, on a kiddush or on an occasion for a toast, all right, you know what, take a little bit of schnapps, you know, a small glass. That's not going to work. That's not going to happen. So we need to go from one extreme to the other extreme. He won't even play these games for free. The same games that he plays for money when he was a gambler, he desists from even playing these games. He's not preoccupied at all with this kind of activity, even though this would be mutter, so that he's going to the other extreme. It reminds me of the Gemara about anger. You know, the Gemara says that if a person is guilty of anger, he has to go to another extreme. Or, for example, if he's guilty of gaiva, he has to go to another extreme in order to end up straight down the middle. So there's certain cases and certain situations in which, in order to change your behavior pattern, you have to take it to the other extreme. Now, I want to share with you the insights here of the Ran. I'm not sure that I understand what bothers the Ran, but let me share it with you. The Ran says the following, Yesh lahakshos. The way the Ran understood afilu bechinam, which is not the way we understood it, mashma sheyesh chidush shafilu bechinam nifsal li edus I didn't think that that's what the Gemara was saying. I thought the Gemara was saying that in order to be machsher himself and do a tshuva gemura, right, he's got to demonstrate this, that afilu bechinam he's not. But he says, the Ran, that when it says afilu bechinam, that he's posel yedus. Maybe what the Ran means is that he continues his status.
Right, because that's what I think the Ran means. That
as posel yedus.
Because if he continues playing, but he's still
called him a sakik
mekubal. He hasn't done tshuva. He hasn't eradicated it from.
So what bothers the Ran? Says the Ran, the chidush zeh, the only way we could justify this chidush, that even though he's playing these games for free, he still remains posel yedus. Edo el fi Rami bar Chama shesover shemesachi bekubi nifsal mishum asmachta, and therefore when he plays these games bechinam, then he's demonstrated that he went to the other extreme. Via brisa mechadeshes shemeshvil achazor b'tshuva, he's going to desist from playing. From gambling, afil bechina. Ach, he says, lefirav sheshes, shapsul bishuv she'edo osek bishuv shel olam. Again, this is the Ran's understanding. Hare, ein lechalek, bein osek bechina, li osek bischar, ki bechol ofen, edo osek bishuv shel olam.
Yes, bitul Torah.
Right, but the Ran is somehow assuming, if I understand correctly, that there's no such thing as playing games. You know, like we used to play Monopoly and Risk. I don't know if any of these things mean anything to you.
Oh, Mike, one grandchild, that's all he wants to play.
Yeah. Which one? Monopoly?
Both.
Monopoly and Risk. Those are our favorite games.
Yes. One all day.
Yeah.
What do they call these games?
Board games.
So what's so terrible if you're playing these games? But he says no. If you're playing these games, then you're Eino Osek Bishuva Shel Olam. It's not that you are doing something that is considered a total waste of time, but rather you're not doing anything constructive. So again, if you play board games for fun, you know, for leisure, when you take a little break, I know in the yeshivas, for example, back in Europe, when they wanted to take a break, what would they play? Anybody know?
Chess.
It was chess. It was the whole ganze Welt was about chess. And you would prove your status in the yeshiva based on your success in chess, because if you won the chess game, it means you had a better hand than the next guy. So, for example, I have a friend, a close friend, he just made Aliyah recently, and he learned in the yeshiva out in Crown Heights. And the yeshiva there found out that he was going ice skating on Saturday night. That wasn't allowed. I'm not going to go into detail why. You could probably figure it out on your own. But so the principal, the rabbi, came over to him and he says to him, Yitzchak, instead of playing on the rink and whatever's involved in ice skating, come over to my house and we'll play chess. Now, the last thing in the world that my friend wanted to do was to play chess on a Saturday night with his rabbi. But from the rabbi's perspective, he was a European, he barely spoke English. And he thought that, you know, giving him an opportunity to challenge the rabbi in chess, you know, where back in Europe he was one of the good chess players. But the Gemara, according to Rav Sheshes, is assuming that this guy is not just playing chess for fun, you know, beta starim, or at night when it's, or maybe on Shabbos, you know, afternoon, but rather he is dedicated to all these games without contributing anything to Yeshuva Shalola. So therefore it makes no difference whether or not he's playing for money or he's not playing for money. At the end of the day, he's not contributing to society. He doesn't have a job, he doesn't have an umdus.
And sof he's becoming an expert. That's what he's. When you continue to play something, you become the expert at the game. You know, and he's becoming an expert at Mesachei Hakuvi, even without the financial benefit. He's now putting himself in a state of
he's obsessed.
he's obsessed, and he has the potential now to easily go into, because now he knows he's an expert. He's the best.
Art Scroll's note says, although the former gambler no longer plays for profit and has socially useful trade by which he supports himself, he must refrain from dice playing even as a pastime. According to the opinion that gambling constitutes theft, the gambler must, of course, return all winnings to the people from whom they were collected.
But wait, but the first part was Rav Sheshes?
It says the Ran.
No, but I'm asking, is this the Ran in Rav Sheshes? Because I'm halfway through the Ran. So I didn't get to the punchline of the Ran yet.
Okay.
So just 1 second. You know what? I want to read that again, but after we finish the Ran. So again, the Ran wants to ask the following. What difference does it make if he's dedicating himself exclusively to playing these games, and that's what he does, Yoma Valila, whether he's getting money or he's not getting money? Says the Ran, well, maybe this Brisa reflects the opinion of Rabbi Bar Chama, that it's all a matter of cheating and stealing. So it depends whether he's playing for money or not. He says, we can't say that. Why? Because Anan Kaimalon ki Rav Sheshes. We paskin like Rav Sheshes. So the truth is, we skipped this. We didn't get a chance to develop this idea. Maybe I'll come back to it later. But we're going to see in the poskim that we accept the view of Rav Sheshes. The Nimtza says the Ran, Shebraisa zu eina kehalacha. He's not comfortable with assuming that this Braisa could only be interpreted based on Rabbi Bar Chama when we paskin against Rabbi Bar Chama like Rav Sheshes. V'tiretz haran, Shemizeh shemesachik bekubya bechinam bal karchach sheyesh lo od umnus shemimeno misparnes. He says the following, that the case that we're talking about where he plays games without money must be referring to someone who has some independent income. He has some sort of profession, some occupation. Because otherwise, if he's spending his day, again, the Ran is not considering that he inherited $1 billion from his rich father. So how is he going to support himself? Oh. Ukshayeshlo umdus, if he has an income and he has a profession, ein chisaron, and we shouldn't be bothered by the fact that he's playing these games. She'eno osek b'yishuvo shel olam, because he is osek b'yishuvo shel olam, he has another profession. And therefore, l'Rav Sheshes, kavonas ha'braisa hi, what the braisa wants to tell us, here's the reading of this braisa according to Rav Sheshes, shekshirotze lachzo b'tshuvo, olav lifrosh b'mishak zeh, afilu k'sha'osek b'umnus acheres. In other words, at one point in his life, he was exclusively dedicated to playing these games. And he would play these games, and he would make profit, and he would support himself. If now, since he was not Osek B'Shuvah Shel Olam, he wants to do tshuva, then it's not enough that he takes on a job, and he has a tlush maskoret. But beyond that, he has to completely cut himself off from these games, even bechinam, because playing these games became such an obsession for him, and he had such pleasure, that he had gotten to the point where he would spend his time, day and night, playing these games. So now let's read the Art Scroll in his footnote. Can you read it again, Steve, but a little bit slower?
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't have the text in front of us.
Right. Okay, so it talks about reinstatement of a disqualified individual requires him to refrain from that activity that by itself does not render him ineligible, but is only somewhat associated with his vice.
Excellent.
Thus, although the former gambler no longer plays for profit and has another socially useful trade by which he supports himself, he must refrain from the dice playing even as a pastime.
Ah, so that's Rav Sheshes, I think. He is not yet up to Rabbi Bar Chama. So this is what the Ran is saying, that in Rav Sheshet's frame of reference, if this fellow was so enamored with playing these games that he didn't even bother getting a job, and he was not osik b'yeshuva shel olam, if he's not contributing to society, he's not out there in the marketplace, then he's possibly aimless. And now, if the preoccupation and his love of this pastime and playing games is what brought him to the state of Eidi Osek B'Yeshuva Shel Olam, then in order to reinstate himself and do tshuva, he's got to completely distance himself from these games in general, because the games become such an enjoyable sport, he becomes addicted to these games. So now, A, he's got to take upon himself a job. He is now contributing to society. But in order to be okay, to go to the other extreme and undermine his entire behavior pattern that he was guilty of and he was addicted to beforehand, he's got to go to the other extreme and completely cut off any relationship, any involvement or preoccupation with these games, even if he's playing for no money. Now we're ready for Rabbi Bar Chama. I think. I don't have the text in front of me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it says anything.
Well, what's the next sentence? Wasn't there another sentence?
I mean, and it said, according to the opinion that gambling constitutes theft.
Oh, this is Rabbi Bar Chama. He leaves out the name to protect the innocent, right. But it's Rabbi Bar Chama, right?
The gambler must, of course, return all winnings to the people for whom they collected.
So that's a whole different dimension. Right. The Ran says that what's missing here in our Braisa, because this Braisa may reflect the sheet of Rav Sheshes, is another element in the equation. It's not enough that he breaks apart his fisfasin, and it's not enough that he completely cuts himself off from these gambling games, even if he's playing for fun. But in addition, he has to reimburse those whose monies he took. That's a gewaldige chumrah. Because if the man has been gambling for I don't know how many years, unless maybe he has his, you know, like in tennis, right? You have your tennis partner, maybe he has his gambling partner. But if he's a gambler, he probably goes from place to place, from bar to bar. I don't know where they gamble in those days. You know, I don't think they had casinos the way we know them. But wherever he's going to have to reimburse those people. Wow, I don't know. That's really going.
Because he had a mila on them, or he took advantage of them. But in this case, it was still a fair game.
No, it's not a fair game. Why? Because Rabbi Bar Chama holds that asmachta lo kanya. That means that the fellow who lost and paid him money, because he won, never really had a gemiras das. He never really committed himself to pay that money. And that's called kain gzeil.
He would have lost. The guy who won, if he would have, he never had the das when he went into the game, saying, if I lose, I'll really pay.
Correct. So the one who won and took that money, he is the... Now again, I would add another comment to this footnote, and that is that only as far as the cases where he won. Let's say you had a gambler who was never a pathetic loser, then he would not have to return any money. He didn't take anybody's money. That's obvious.
We pointed out here that the gambler has to go to the other extreme and stop playing at all. But I'm kind of curious, like according to the Rambam, is it the Shuva or Shimon HaProfim, where he says you go to the other extreme, so you end up in the middle.
Right. In this case, you know, we don't want you to end up in the middle. We really want you to end up completely cold turkey. That's the phrase I would like to use. Now, what would be, this is an interesting case, and maybe Ruvain, this is what you're referring to, let's say down the line, 10 years later, which is so typical in alcoholics, right? 10 years later, he starts playing again. So for the last 10 years, he was cold turkey, and he was kosher liedus. Now he starts playing again, but he only plays for fun. Does he become kosher liedus? In other words, it could be possible that once he does tshuva and he fulfills all these conditions and he goes, as you said, to the other extreme, then from now on he's like any other member of society. He can only become possible, we're going to Rabbi Bar Chama, in a case where he plays for money. even though, again, in the process of tshuva, in order to reinstate himself as an Ein Kosher, he would have to go to such an extreme that he doesn't play even bechinam, even for fun. But once he's gotten to the point where we reinstated him as an aid, we're not going to say to him, well, if you pick up a card, you know, well, years down the line, and you start playing for fun, you become possibly aidless. Now your status is equal to anyone who's kosher. Or do we say no? If we want to be really strict about it, and machmir, we could say the moment that he reverts. Is chozer from his chazara, right, and the chazara required him afil bechinam, that itself, as a chazara for chazara, reinstates his original psul. Why? Because the original psul was only removed through chazara. And now he does a chazara from the chazara, and he in effect is mevatel his chazara by playing this game for fun. Is Mamela, once he's Mavatel is Chazara, then there is no Chazara. Or do we say no? That the Chazara changes his status. Meaning, when a person does this reform, like you mentioned, Hanan, the other day, reform school, right? Does that mean that on an ongoing basis, he has to be so dedicated to that reform that if he lifts his hands for one moment to that reform program, then at that point the entire Chazar stops dead in its tracks and he's possible? Or do we say no? He's changed his status, he has now reinstated himself, and he has the status as an Ein Kosher, and we treat him just like any other person, and since Bechina would not possible him according to Rabbi Bar Choma, or, for example, if he still has a job, then even according to Rav Sheshes, he wouldn't be possible. He's Osek B'Yishuvah Shel Olam. That even though he has failed in his Chazara program, his reform project, nevertheless, he hasn't done, he hasn't crossed the red line to make himself into possible. That's what I think, Ruben, you were asking.
I guess that's based on how we consider real tshuva. What's tshuva? What's you know the essence of tshuva? Because if we have somebody else that's
well,
other concepts of tshuva.
It depends what you mean by tshuva.
Yeah,
if you mean by tshuva the Rambam Hilchas tshuva, then you're right. We have to understand what tshuva is. Is tshuva mean he changes his status and the past is completely wiped off? And that might depend upon tshuva miyava, tshuva miyira. But if we're dealing with chazara li'edus, that's a whole different issue. The Rambam is going to codify these halachas in Hilchas Edus, not in Hilchas Tshuva. Nowhere in Hilchas Tshuva is, well, that's not exactly true, but we'll get to that in a minute. But in the first, let's say, three chapters of Hilchas Tshuva, when the Rambam is talking about Tshuva, he doesn't mention, you know, the obligation to destroy your fispasin, you know, you throw out all your instruments.
It leads to something else. Like,
does anybody have a Rabbi Milchus Tshuva by any chance? It's okay.
He's enabling. It's like an alcoholic drinking an old drink.
Say once again, Chanon, I'm sorry.
He's like an enabling himself because it's like an alcoholic who's quit drinking a malted drink here. They don't have these malted drinks without alcohol in them. So eventually he's going to drink these malted drinks that are like beer. They don't have the beer, you know, the alcohol in them. And eventually it's going to lead him to. So it's just putting him a step closer to.
Right,
crossing that.
But I'm asking the following. Let's say a person does X. That itself would not possible him for Eidus. But what if he was already possibly Eidus? We already established him as an Eid possible. We've changed his status. Now the halacha requires a certain system of actions. If he fails in those actions, then basically his status is that of an Eid possible.
I understand.
And well, it could
clean.
Be...
He's clean, is what you're saying.
That's what I'm wondering. Is he really clean, or for the rest of his life he has to prove himself to be clean? Do you understand what I'm saying?
It's human nature that if you want to quit drinking and you quit drinking, then you really can't play around with it because you're going to go back to drinking.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. You know, I'm seeing here an alarm bell, a red alarm bell go off the moment he starts playing these games. But is that enough to passel and frame this? There's a status change here. That's called a chal shem gavra in the fancy language of Bris. there was a status change in which he did X and he became possible.
Right.
Now, he does Y and he becomes kosher.
Right.
That also is a status change.
So, are you on probation for a certain period of time, right, or is it forever?
As a retroactive, the minute he does anything that's
I mean, if you say you're on probation for the next 10 years, that you can't do this.
I understand the
or
so what I'm saying is that the chazorah, if we understand it as you call probation, it's now a chazorah, and that chazorah means we reinstate his status as an eid kosher. Then from now on, treat him as an eid kosher. And what did he do? He played bechino? That's not enough to passel him. Or do we say no? It's what you call a lifelong project that for the rest of his life he has got to prove himself.
You want tshuva? He'll tshuva. What perk?
No. This is not going to do it for me. No. I have to turn pages.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah, but I need also hilchos eidos because I'm going to show you that the Rambam in Hilchos Eidos codifies all these halachas and he omits them in Hilchos Tshuva. But for that I know the Tzuris Adaf, you know, I'd have to flip through.
I understand. That's it. Okay.
And the reason I want to look into this is because I wanted to share with you, unfortunately I don't have the sefer in front of me, a book called Al HaTshuva by my Rebbe. So let's go on. We have three other cases. Case number two out of the four is Malve Meribis, Echad Malve Echad Lov Emasai Chazarosam Bishe Yikru Es Shtarehem. So imagine a malve who's a professional loan shark and he makes his profit by charging interest. He's always has in his drawer, in the top drawer of his desk, he has a shtar ready. That shtar says that I'm going to lend you X and you're going to pay me back X plus Y. Or the lover, for example, who knows that from time to time, unfortunately, he needs a loan, so he already prepares the shtar to give over to the malva. These documents have to be accessible because sometimes, you know, if you have to write up a shtar in the old days, you have to hire a scribe and so forth. It could take a month until you get, you know, until you finally get the shtar. You don't have that month to waste, so you're already prepared the shtaros. So in the case of a malva or a lova beribis, it's not enough that he desists from usury, from interest, but he has to actually destroy the shtaros. He has to go to another extreme, as we said.
So does that mean his previous shtaros also? That they lent other people money? Is that what that means towards future shtaros?
I think it means future shtaros. So yikru shtareya means he's ready for the shtar. He's got it in his all the old shtaros are possible anyway, because a shtar. But we're afraid of the Maisa Vera. In other words, he's going to lend with interest and he has a tool, he has a utensil, an instrument that's prepared, and that's the shtar. So again, it's not enough. Yachzru Bahem Chazora Gebura. They're not involved at all in ribis. But also, he has to rip up his shtar. And now, we go on one step further. And this is really extreme. He says, "Afilu l'dachri lo musve beribis." What it means is that although the halacha allows a person to lend to a goy beribis, which means that we have a right to treat the goy the way they treat each other, we have a super compassion for our brothers, you know, who are part of our nation, and the Torah says you can't charge ribis, you have to give a free loan, which is an amazing kind of chesed when you think about it, tying up your money without getting any benefit from it. But as far as the nachri is concerned, my obligation vis-a-vis the nachri is the same as the guy vis-a-vis another guy. He's allowed to take ribis, but here in this case, in order to demonstrate that he has completely changed his behavior pattern, and this parallels what we saw about Mesachi Bakuvi Afilu Bechinam, is Afilu Benachri, even for a guy, he will not take ribis.
He's out of business.
Totally out of business.
Totally out of business.
And keep in mind, Rabosai, that the Torah seems to indicate that there is a mitzvah to lend a guy beribis, meaning to demonstrate the difference between our relation with a Jew and our relation with a non-Jew. The Torah says in Parshas Ki Teitzei Lenachri Toshich Ulachicholo Toshich. But then in this case, he's not going to have the option of lending beribis to a guy, and the reason for that is he has to prove
total.
That the whole concept of ribbis is completely foreign to him. He has to forget about ribbis. Doesn't exist. It's no longer on his radar screen. And in such a case, he will never, hopefully never, come back to be malva beribbis. The Yad Rabbah adds a comment here. He writes, Shal osa tshuva tzorech lekadesh atzmo bimutar lo. We have a principle called Kedoshim Tiyu. And what do we derive from that principle, that mitzvah of Kedoshim Tiyu? Kadesh Atzmecha B'mutalecha. If you want to go to an extreme of Kedusha, then sometimes it entails distancing yourself even from that which is Muta. And that's called Lasos Harchaki Yisera. You go to another extreme to distance yourself. Kedesh Lo Yovo Od Lidei Kilkul. Now this Yad Ramah would be antithetical to everything that I've told you. I told you that this sugya that we're learning is not a sugya hilchas tshuva, but rather it's a sugya hilchas edus. The rabbi is going to codify these halachos in edus. Thank you, Ravid. If you can open up to hilchas edus, do you know where it is? It's perek yud halacha dalit. Okay, and then I'll look at Hilchus Tshuva. For that, I have to flip through it.
I'm sorry.
Perek Yud Halacha Dalet, Hilchus Edus. I think Edus is towards the end, not at the very end. But so, Rabosa, you're listening carefully. The Yad Ramah tells us that we're studying here the laws of Tshuva. When a person is guilty, he's a sinner. And it becomes almost habitual, he has to go to the other extreme, laharchik es atzmo, kineshi lo yavo only de kilkul, and that's called kadesh atzmecha b'mutalecha. That's the Yad Ramah. Now, I'm not disagreeing with the Yad Ramah. Everything he says is true, but that's not what we're learning here. The Yad Ramah has no, according to our understanding, has no right to derive that from our sugya, our b'rice. Our b'rice is talking about hilchas edus, and hilchas edus is a formal legal procedure or set of requirements and conditions that have to be met in order to reinstate your chalushem gavra as an aid kosher.
What?
The halacha is pretty wrong.
Right, right. But does he have the case of Asachi Pekuvia?
Perek Dalet?
Yeah. Perek Yud, halacha Dalet.
Yud Dalet.
And the Rambam says that. Just 1 second. Okay. Chena Malve Beribis. Fine, he differentiates whether it's Shel Torah. Okay, then where is Chazorah? Okay, so we don't have Chazorah here. Just 1 second, maybe the Rambam of Chazorah is in Perek Yud Beis, perhaps. Let's see Perek Yud Beis, maybe. Of course, in Perek Yud, he's telling you who's possible and how he became possible. I'm a little bit more interested in Chazorah, how he reinstates himself.
Wait.
That's, I think, in Perek Yud Beis, we hold to say this. Let's see. Oh, here, very good. He says, Be'ebasai Chazorahs Hamasachik Bekubia, Misha Yishberu Es Psifiseyem, Be'achzuru Be'em Chazorah Gmur Shel Yasu, Afilu Be'chino. Be'ebasai Chazorahs Sochei Shvi'a, sorry, we didn't get to that yet. Where is Malva Beribis? Okay, I'm not finding that now, but we'll get to that as well. Oh, here it is. Be'emasai halacha hei, chazoras Malva Beribis, mishi yikru'u es shtareyem, be'atzman v'yachzuru behem chazor gmura, shalo yilvu Beribis hafilu Afilu Lugoi.
He has to tear up all the...
all the shtaros. Okay, Asher asked me about old shtaros. Well, let's say from now on, he has a whole bunch of shtaros prepared. You know, he's waiting for the next lover to come in so he can produce. He can give the shtar.
Boilerplate.
Just 1 second. I just want to see.
The next one is Vav is also Zuchil Kuvya. Also,
yeah, I read Vav already. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you heard me. Okay. But what we're trying to do now is see if there's any parallel in Hilchus Tshuva. Let's see if I can find this. How are we doing on the clock? Not too great. Okay. Let's just see if... okay. So unfortunately, I don't have with me the Ala Tshuva. We don't have an Ala Tshuva here, do we? Maybe in English? There's an English Ala Tshuva. I think it was translated to a whole bunch of different languages. Just give me a second. So, Rebosa, I'm going to make a statement here which might make me into a total ignoramus, I don't know, that the Rambam doesn't have any of these halachas in Hilchus Tshuva. It's only in Hilchus Eidus. So let me share with you something I heard a zillion years ago from my Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik. He was talking in a Tshuva drasha about two categories of Tshuva. The Torah says, Ki bayoma ze yechaper aleichem letayr eschem. So the Torah starts with lechaper aleichem, and then it goes on to letayr eschem. We have two concepts here that are indicated in the verse in the Torah. One is called kapara, and the other is called tahara. And Rav Soloveitchik claims that those two concepts are fundamentally different, one from the other. In the case of kapara, there are various requirements of tshuva that are required in order to achieve kapara. Kapara means that God wipes off a chov. It's like mechila. This has nothing to do with the status of a person. His status will not change through kapara. Kapara will only help him to alleviate any penalties, any punishments that he should suffer as a result of his sin. That's called kapara. The Ramban identifies kapara as wiping something off. Like when you have dirt on a table, so in Lashon Kodesh you want to wipe off the table of its dirt, that's called lechaper, to cleanse it. Tara, he says, is a whole other concept. Tara is not some sort of formal legal process in the halachic world in which you achieve mechila and you're spared punishment. It's not like you hold a shield, you know, against punishment. That's kapara. Tara means a total change and transformation of the person. And the Rav develops many nafkaminas, for example, hirur.
How does that happen, Tara?
Oh, for example, hirur. Hirur means that he has made a decision in his mind that he will never come back to this action and do this aver again. The Rav says that that's not going to be enough for kapara. Why? Because the Rambam has a whole bunch of laws here at the beginning of Hilchus Tshuva that set up regulations and conditions for kapara. One of them is vidui. So the fact that he in his mind has made a decision, thank you, that he will amend his ways, that's not going to give kapara. And there are millions of other halachas here and requirements with regard to kapara which we don't have time to go into now. For example, in certain cases he has to bring a karbon if the mikdash is there. In other cases he may have to suffer yisurim, he may have to undergo and experience Yom Kippur as a Yom HaMechaper. And the Rambam here codifies the halacha of Yitzuma Shal Yom Mechaper. However, there's another kind of tshuva which is called a tshuva shel tahara, purification. And in that case, he completely changes and alters his personality. It works in two ways. On the one hand, we might drop certain requirements and regulations and conditions, but on the other hand, it requires a total, absolute change in his whole way of thinking, in his whole approach to sin, in his change in his very essence. That's called tahara, to purify himself. It's like a person who goes into mikveh. The mikveh is metayer him. Tshuva can also be a metayer. And without going into all the details about how he has to achieve tahara, and again, it goes in both directions. It's a lakula, and there's certain leniencies, certain conditions that aren't necessary for tahara, but it also goes lachumra, because he has to reach a very high level before he can achieve tahara. The Rambam in Hilchos Eidus is not talking about classic tshuva of kapara. The Rambam dedicates Hilchos Tshuva to kapara. But in Hilchos Eidus, we're not talking about kapara. We're not talking about Bein Adam Lemakov. In other words, this guy was a Masachik Bekubia, and he's going to be punished for that because of his sins. And how does he gain kapara to wipe off that Chiyuv Onesh? That's not our subject. Our subject is a transformation of personality, because we want to reinstitute his shame, Eid Kosher. For that, we require Tahara. And here's where our sugya comes in, and the Rambam paskens like that in Hilchos Eidus Perek Yud, that we require for Tahara to go from one extreme to the other. For Kapara, it wouldn't be necessary. So, for example, if a Masachik Bekubi is guilty of theft, he would have, as we said before, Steve, he would have to return that theft. He would have to completely desist. But he would not have to destroy his Fisfisehem. Or Malva Berivis would not have to destroy his Shtaros. Those activities, or desisting from even lending to a guy with rivis, even that has to go. That's part of a process of tahara, and not tshuva. So we'll stop. Yeah,
tahara is more chamor. It seems like
again it'll be more makil, well, in certain sense, because again hiruhur without vidui could be meaningful for tahara, will not be meaningful for kapara. You need vidui for kapara. In any event, we're going to stop here at Mafriche Yonim. And Kulin Eder on Sunday, we'll pick up Mafrika Yonim and Sokre Shvius.